Welcome to the Wide World of Punting, episode 3 of our second season, where we go even more in depth in our punting conversations. I'm Jacob Wynn from The Tripod, and in a moment we're jumping straight back into part 2, my chat with Mark Porter. It's great to hear from you guys that a lot of people enjoyed part 1. If you didn't catch that, you can definitely jump straight out of here and check it out on YouTube, Facebook, or any pod players, or just hang around, listen to part 2. If you find that interesting, you can always go back. Tonight we've also got Tristan back on the show. We're going to talk to him about some similar topics that we covered with Mark, like how the industry's changed. I asked Tristan to reflect on the biggest changes from his perspective in the last 10 years. We've got the Wide World Bet of the Week, which is going to be linked to the Big Bash that fires up this weekend. If that's the only part of the pod that's tied to any current event, and that's always going to be at the very end of the episode if you're interested. So back to Mark Porter. In part one of our conversation last week's episode, we talked about his really interesting journey that he's had through working for a professional betting syndicate, a bookie, his own business, how he started Punt Hub. Lots to do with like what it's like to run a big group from both of us, ideas he has of how he wants to make the group even better in the future, and some very honest and hopefully good advice about responsible gambling. Part two covers more about day-to-day challenges involved in running a big group, the people involved, stress, the costs involved, and the abuse that you do cop, regardless of all the efforts. We talk about creating more original content, such as the show No Morals that we had this year. And then we talk about the big topic of group monetization, the affiliate links that you see running through groups like mine or Punt Hub, what the revenue models are with that, other ways groups can make money, working for the bookies, which I say in air quotes. But anyway, we kind of explain how that all actually works. But our chat begins jumping into ways that Punt Hub has actually grown. As I mentioned last week, it's up to nearly 100,000 members now. So Mark talks about how that has happened.
One thing I will say, actually, and I didn't touch on this earlier, is that people say, oh, yeah, there's a lot of luck involved in how we got sort of big as well. Like, it's not just that we've, you know, we're not, we haven't discovered some crazy secret. And it was very much in the right place at the right time for us. Like, us, yourself, there's a couple of other groups out there and stuff like that, you know, we were in the right place at the right time and survived sort of some shaky times and stuff. So it's not that, I mean, to start a group now and to try to build it to something like that, to nearly 100, like, it would be so hard because there's so many out there.
I reckon is we were both probably early onto the whole notion of a Facebook group. Like, the first group I was ever in on Facebook was a Tripod group, you know, or one of the very first. Like, we had this idea that I think I read on like just some article through Google or whatever, that like groups can be get more engagement than pages. And I remember just talking to Alex about it, like, let's just try. And what I realized pretty quickly is you do get way more engagement. You get people commenting and saying, oh yeah, I'm on this with you, or I disagree, because they don't feel like their partner or their parents or their work colleagues can read that, whereas they might if they're commenting on a public page. So there's that feeling that they're within a community. So then actually the group like really did grow. But, you know, that was back when people weren't in many groups. Like, that probably would have been one of the only groups. But nowadays there's so many groups that like you can be in a bunch and you wouldn't even see half the posts that are in those groups. 100%. That would be a much bigger challenge, is how you're going to grow if you don't have kind of engagement within your group.
Yeah, 100%. So we did the engagement pretty well, and we tried to do the daily tipping thread and stuff, but they've kind of like fizzled at the moment. Like, we it's really funny, like anything, like it's sort of like cyclical and like seasonal. We've gone through some really great times in the group where we've had some funny pricks posting, and there's some really good tipsters posting, you know, like some of our tips have been going well, some of the admin tips have been going well, and it just hums along. And like, it's felt like those days you sort of like, fuck, this is great. I actually feel like it is a community. Like, I feel like there'd be a bunch of us. If we all went to the races one day, everyone, like, it feels like harmonious, you know, this great idea. There's also, and we're in a bit of a lull at the moment where our tips from Punt Hub that I do with sort of like a business partner and another guy, horrible. They're going, you know, we're going legless at the moment. The daily tips, the tipping threads aren't really getting attention. People are just trying to post their own tips, which is kind of fine. Because, like, it's so easy for me to sit there because I'm involved in the group and all day, every day, I know what the rules are. But, like, put yourself in the shoes of, like, someone else. Like, someone else might get a 20-minute break at work and they just go, all right, and they open Facebook and they'll just see a post that the algorithm has put on their screen. And they'll go, oh, this guy's having a bet. Yeah, when's that? Hawkesbury. Okay, shit, that's in half an hour. Yeah, I'll have a bet on that. They're not going to sit there and spend hours and scroll through the group to see, you know what I mean? So it's a bit righteous of us to think, like, you know, follow the rules, guys, like only posting the daily threads. And some people are like, fuck, man, fuck your daily threads. I'm not worried about that. Here's my tip. I'll just post it in the group. If you guys don't allow it, well, that's your loss.
Yeah, you know, yeah. So, like, you've got all these rules, but not necessarily everyone's read them. Or there was a major issue in the group, so you're like, I need to address this. So you're going to, like, put a big post up and address it, like, whatever.
But the
truth is, while a lot of people might read that post, three weeks later, there's new people. Yeah, and they haven't read it and stuff.
Yeah.
But then they're repeating, you know, a behavior or an issue that you thought you'd already kind of handled. But you're right. Like, so many people are just dipping in for, you know, 1 minute or whatever.
So it's
very hard.
Yeah. It's hard to keep them all. Like, it'd be hard to keep a group with, you know, 400 people, like, to follow the same style of posting and rules and stuff. And then you get, like, obviously people don't want to, and there are people in there that are trying to, like, they've got their own little sort of, like, tipping service, so they don't want to post in the thread because they think it doesn't get seen by as many people and all that stuff. So, I mean, how do you combat that? I don't know. Is the answer. Like, we were thinking of trying to say to everyone, turn off posts so only the admins can post, and put a daily thread until if people like that thread, they'll get a notification when someone comments. So then that's something that we're sort of tossing up trying. But then that could also kill the engagement, because you've got to remember there's also people out there that just want to post something either nonsensical that might be funny, or post something like, they're like, there was one guy, I think, that had a $17,000 multi that lost by half a point or something. And he's like, you know, fuck, look at this. It was an NBA player prop or something. I don't know. So there's those things that you'd lose. And that's part of the group, right? Some people, there are people out there that like tips, not slips, which I get. I get to the most of the extent I get that. I don't want to see someone post a $10 bet where they won $75 on something. Like, to me, that's just, I'm just like, oh. But that guy's like, that might be his biggest win ever. So he's like, yeah, look at me, right? Like, so it's kind of hard to find that middle ground where you want to encourage people to engage, but you don't want them to get laughed off or just be like, you know, have people roll their eyes and think, fuck, this dribbler's doing this. Ultimately,
it's like trying to keep the standard or the quality of the posts within your group high, because if a bunch of, like, garbage posts get approved and are in there, people will kind of tune out. If if they're scrolling through Punt Hub and, like, every second post is just like, Ballarat race 3-1, get on. And then every other post is like, boom, and then someone just hit a $4 winner or whatever, but it's meaningful to them. And the next post is, should I cash out? And, you know, they're just like, not interested. So it comes back to, like, what's interesting? What would be things that I'd want to send to people in the group chat? And, like, if somebody's got the last leg of their multis on today and they stand to win 50K, like, yeah, I don't mind, like, allowing that
That's
post
cool.
in, because it's like, yes, yeah, group interest. Or someone's had the worst beat of all time. It's like, oh my God, like, you kind of, you are interested. So that's where we have to exercise some judgment, or, you know, admins that in the group, of what you allow in. But yeah, how many do you see of, like, boy, should I cash out? And people probably don't understand. It's like, how many posts are coming through each day, and that, like, you referred to, like, working at a pub over the years, but you can let people know, like, you still work full time at a pub.
Yeah.
Which ties into, I think, into the affiliate conversation and what you said before about investing in the website, is people think that you run Punt Hub with 93,000 members, so you must be a millionaire. Like, people think you must be raking in the cash. It's really not the reality. But also, I was just getting back to that point, I think, of time consuming. It's like, so many people are putting their posts through, and then we've got to constantly be monitoring that, deciding what gets approved, what doesn't. And then it's all like, oh, this got approved too late. I posted a tip and it won. an hour ago, but you didn't approve it. Like, people expect that there should be someone monitoring 24/7. Because I think,
yeah,
I presume, man, Punt Hub, you're currently going on admin approval, because you can't really not do that, or otherwise the group would have hundreds of posts per day.
And it just goes to shit. It just goes to absolute shit. Oh, we've done that. We used to do it every couple of Sundays, which I just go, right, free for all. You guys, approval's off, go nuts. And it was kind of easy now, because I don't know if you guys have set this up, but there's Admin Assist, which is a Facebook. For the audience out there, Facebook has a thing now called Admin Assist, where, like, it's using their AI. You can just...
filter.
You can just not allow posts with, like, a link to a certain site. So say I don't want, so we've put Telegram, like, I think it's www.t.me/. So any Telegram link that shouldn't just be able to be posted or commented. You can do the same with comments. We've turned off anyone posting without a profile picture, because we were getting heaps of, like, scammy sort of, like, non-profile picture people. They can't make a post or comment if they've had a Facebook account for less than 6 months. And we often don't even let them in the group now if they've had a Facebook account for less than 6 months. And there's a lot of them.
And people probably wouldn't realize, like, I actually get people messaging me, oh, like, I'm so frustrated. Someone commented on my post, you know, and it was a spam Telegram link. And, like, why are you letting these people in? And people don't probably realize that. It's actually like an infestation of these bots that are just constantly, and they get in, and whether they got in months ago and then they add their friends in, or whether they're also jumping in daily. And, like, you are doing this similar to us. Like, we've got, like, certain filters that automatically won't accept, you know, people who've made an account in the last year or whatever. And then we manually, like, comb through them, because there might be people who've made new to try and let them in or whatever. But for every, like, one or two that gets in and then instantly spams seven posts in the thread with, like, a, you know, whatever, fixed matches Telegram link here or whatever, or guaranteed wins Telegram, there's probably a few hundred that we've rejected as well. So people, like, actually will take it out on me or you or other admins, or you're doing a crap job, when actually I might have spent, you know, I might have spent 15 minutes on my phone, like, you know, on a Sunday morning, like, filtering through, trying to, like, weed out as many as we can. Like, it's actually a current epidemic on Facebook of these. And it's all, I think, like, Facebook needs to do a better job of, but I don't know, obviously it wouldn't be easy, but, like, maybe it goes back to, like, verifying people's identity, because the amount of fake accounts that are on Facebook is just insane. Yeah. But then I guess the argument is, like, do people have a right to be anonymous on Facebook? If you're a school teacher, if you're a police officer, also, you don't want to have your real name on there. I actually respect all that as well, that people might want to be on Facebook, not on their real name. But then, all these fake accounts is actually, like, a real time-consuming issue for group admins.
A thing with the Telegram, I know this is conspiracy. This is silver tin foil hat type of stuff. But someone, a guy that pretty techie sort of guy, he reckons it's in their interest, because they're all part of the metrics. So if you're paying Facebook $600 a day to reach Australian men ages 18 to 64, if I don't know, 3,000 of those accounts are just fakes, like, it makes their spend look better. Does that make sense?
I hadn't thought of that, but I actually see what you mean. Like, It makes the traffic and the engagement look bigger, like, which actually benefits Facebook. Yeah.
And they're like, okay, so, you know, but then I said, but if I'm spending that money, like, let's say I'm selling clothes and I'm spending that money and I'm getting X amount of impressions, an impression, I think, is when, like, a set of eyeballs see it. If it's a bot, obviously, it'll come up on the bot's page, but then there's no one watching that.
Yeah.
Then my actual conversion is in people that are buying clothes will be tiny, right?
Yeah.
And then after a while, you'd think, well, that's like, I'm not going to spend money on this form of marketing anymore. But like my mate said, but it's kind of, they've made enough money out of that amount of time that it takes that business to find out that the conversion's never going to get better.
That's what you got me thinking. It's like a short term, a business thinks if we can reach 10,000 people, that's worth X dollars to us. And then it's in Facebook's interest for those numbers to be inflated. But sustainability-wise, what you said, like if you're reaching non-genuine customers, you're not going to actually get that return on investment from your marketing spend in the long run. But it might take you quite a while to figure that out.
It'll take a year or something.
Yeah,
it'll take
exactly.
You 12 months of, and they'll try all these different marketing terms. I'm not a marketing sort of student, but you know, A/B testing. They'll be trying all these different things. Why aren't people buying these clothes? Or they will. They'll hit a few. And they might just think, well, that's
the conversion rate.
Yeah, that's the conversion rate. You know, it's on Instagram, it's better. But apparently Instagram, there's heaps of bots too. There's like in comments and stuff, there's heaps of bots. But I mean, I don't know about that. But
ultimately, if it takes away from the user experience, and as you say, like long-term advertisers are going to get frustrated about it. But that actually is really interesting that like there's only so much Facebook can do, and it isn't necessarily to their detriment if a lot of numbers are inflated. But that's some of the challenges. But I thought I also wanted to ask like any other positive highlights or memorable moments that come up. You've run the group for 3 or 4 years. There's lots of like funny moments. Like you mentioned when somebody shares a great tip and it really makes a lot of sense and a lot of people jump on and then we know you cause a bit of a plunge and then it wins. Like that's an awesome feeling, like a community feeling that we're all in it together and we've all, you know, won on a long odd multi or a long shot. Does anything kind of spring to mind for you?
Well, like we said, you and I have talked about like, so in terms of a bet, I mean, there's been the runs like Jason Campbell, JC started in Punhub and went on like 5 in a row and that was pretty cool. And it's funny, I don't know if this is true or not, but like I reckon he almost started the long form tip, as in maybe other people had been doing it in other groups. I don't know. But in my memory, whether it's biased or not, it was Jason that started. He was like Hawkesbury, race 4, number 6, da, da, da. And he would write a long form tip. So he'd say, you know, this 4-year-old gelding out of whatever breeding it was, you know, trained at this camp, has trialed, blah, blah, blah. And he would go into like significant depth about why he was putting that tip forward. And he went on 5 in a row, right? And that was crazy those times. And
then Benny Scarf eclipsed that this year. It was 6 or 7 in a row.
Eight, I think, didn't he? I think
Yeah, I don't want to sell him short. Sorry, Benny.
Yeah.
Shout out Scarfy, because obviously we collaborated to actually bring those two blokes together over spring. And that ties into like what, you know, one of the goals that you had spoken about before of like making it a community that and creating content that would be meaningful and informative and entertaining for the people that are in the community. So that was a bit of a trial run, what we've been through over the last, 8 weeks of spring block there, getting these boys together.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I think a lot of people enjoyed it, you know, and like, it's funny, I spoke to, well, for the audience, so it was your idea. So shout out to Jacob here. So for the audience, Jacob spoke to me and said, Mark, I've got this idea. What do you reckon about, why don't we get, because Benny Scarf was on, he was either towards the end of his, like when he was tipping all these winners in a row, right? And it was piss funny. His videos were obviously very funny. He's like, he's got a good sense of humor, Scarf. And he's like, why don't we bring together the two like young guys, the two younger that have the biggest sort of following and just bring them together. And it's kind of cool because they're sort of different personalities, right? They're not two cheeky blokes that are just trying to take the piss out of each other. They're also not two analytical guys that are just trying to sort of like out data each other, out stat perform each other. They're sort of one of each, and they're both good at what they do. And there's more that goes on behind the scenes that people sort of, I had to defend Benny and said, oh, he's just saying, he's just picking a number and just says back Benny win playing. I said, look, I know Ben. There's a bit more behind the scenes. He's not just throwing darts. And I think the fact that he tipped all those winners in a row, and like he went on a shit run before that, and he'll admit to that too. So, I mean, I'm on a similar run now where it's just we've had, I think, horrible run in the last sort of 2 and 3 weeks. So it happens. But, you know, I was hoping that the audience would trust that given that he's done some, you know, had some of these runs, it's obviously you can't throw that many darts and keep hitting bullseye. So anyway, that was Jacob's idea, and he said, why don't we bring them together and see how we go? And we were like, we got them on a chat group on Facebook, and we're like, all right, we need some names. And I think you came up with no morals too. You were like, some young boys ripping and tearing, you know, when you have no morals. And I was like, perfect, that's it. And I was like pretty happy with that. I've never done video. I mean, even this is a bit, this is out of my comfort zone doing this because I've never really done it. I'm not used to it. First run at sort of going and filming and watching how it works and watching them, hearing them and sort of going through sort of how you edit it and put the graphics up and stuff. And their content was good, was great. And also the tips were pretty bloody good too. Going forward, I mean, Jacob and I know that we want to do more of this type of stuff. And, you know, I think there's great value in that, whether it's, I mean, what this podcast, The Wild World of Punting, is great. You know, like I said before, there's another thing out there. If you enjoy wagering, that is, some people that just, there are people out there that would watch this and go, this is the most boring shit I've ever heard, which is fair enough, right? Each to their own. No one's holding a gun to your head to watch this. And there's some people that would find that the content that racing.com puts out much better than the content that Benny and Jason put out. That's fine too. You know, there's a market for, you can have different tastes and that's absolutely fine. Watch what you like. But in saying that, I do think, given this, like, it feels like there's a whole big, there's a changing of the guard in certain sort of, like, with when it comes to, like, media and content. You know, like, even looking at I think it was Fox Sport or Channel 9, the NRL guys, right? Like, there's a guy, you might know, do you know Andy Raymond?
Yeah, he got let go from Fox during like COVID.
Right. Yeah, and he's unreal. And it was like he's now gone and he's got his own podcast. And some of his guests, that content is
fantastic. Oh, he's got all the contacts, so he gets all the biggest names in the sport. Yeah,
right. Now, I reckon, touch wood, and I've never met the bloke. So if you're watching, shout out to you. But and I hope that it goes super for him. But it's this. It feels like there's a shift away from these massive big conglomeration, like these multi fucking national businesses like Fox and News Corp or Fairfax or whoever the big media hubs are, or Channel 7, Channel 9, all those. So anyone can just go out now and buy, I've got an iPad here and sit in my lounge, in my sort of little home office, and just, you can have a yarn, right? And put it, and if there are people that enjoy that, they'll watch. At the end of the day, the people that win, the people that sort of benefit from that are the consumer, because there's more competition. Like, I mean, in any economic situation sense, competition benefits the end user because it brings down the price, because they're trying to sort of undercut each other until to get the business, until there's sort of like an equilibrium point where they can't go anymore, otherwise they won't make a profit. So, you know, with all
and in the realm of content creation, it's not really undercutting each other. It's trying to up your game. It's trying to create the best and the most engaging and most beneficial content that people will want to consume, because people can only consume so much. Everyone's got X amount of free time.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, that's what comes down to what you said before. Like, of course I know way less people than tune in weekly for my NRL tips want to hear an hour long, you know, more in-depth betting discussion in the summer. But that's okay, because there's still a few people out there that do find it interesting and like do enjoy the conversation and do get interest out of it and knowledge from it. And so that's fine, because we enjoy, you know, creating it. And for yourself, like you said, you haven't really delved into too much kind of putting your face in front of like content, but you've got a lot of knowledge to share, and you know, you are very candid and forthright with your knowledge. So like, why not, you know, be more, have the, you've got the platform. Yeah. To be able to share it. But we were delving into a bit of business there. So this is probably where we can tackle this question that a lot of people probably have in their mind, and people might think they know how it works, but they may not, which is basically like, how do you groups make money? Or like, if you're spending all these hours, which you talked about, which we can talk about a little bit more as well, like all the little bits and pieces that are involved in running a group and all of the expenses and costs. Like obviously you've got to run a website, you've got to you've got literal hours of creating content, you're creating graphics, you know, You're giving away competitions, you're giving away merch, like all sorts of stuff that you know, is costing you time and money. Not to mention, like, you're copping it, you're getting abuse, whether you're sharing tips and then you've got people abusing you, or you got people, as we said before, abusing you because, you know, you're the school principal and one kid's mum is not happy that their kid got, you know, got put down, and the other kid's mum is not happy that their kid got harshly, you know, penalized for it, and you can't win and all that. So there's a lot of time and stress that goes into all of this. Yes, you know, the groups make money, probably not as much as people think, but we're making money predominantly from bookmakers.
Yeah.
And for affiliate links.
Definitely. So, like, people are like, oh, you guys just work for the fucking bookies and stuff. Like, I'll explain it how it works. We're a punting group, for starters. Like, our name is Punt Hub, right? So, I'm just trying to think of an example. Like, if you've got a food and beverage magazine for the pub that we get, the people that are advertising in that are going to be the people that provide food and beverage, like ovens, refrigeration, like glassware. You know what I mean? Because that's the audience. So there's a couple of ways that bookies will and they're all different, but there's a couple of ways that they can look to pay you. Some of them just flat out will say, right, what's it? They'll pay you per post. They might say, like,
if they're running a campaign, like, we're doing this for spring or this for they this state say, of origin match, and we want you to post in your group because you've got this platform, and it's like being paid for a billboard or whatever, and it's a flat fee, and then you can just decide, is it worth it to you?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it'd be nice to get more, but some of them, I mean, 250 was probably the most that we've ever been paid for a post. So that gives you an idea. It's not a lot of money, and it's not like they're going to post every day, right? They'll do one. They might give you $1,000 a month, and you do have to do four posts in the month of leading up to spring or whatever it is. There's also CPA, which is called cash, which is stands like
commission per acquisition.
Cash per acquisition.
Yep.
So it's like literally a fee that you will get if someone signs up to, you know, XYZ bet through an affiliate link of yours. Once they deposit their net deposit, once they deposit $50, a minimum of 50. So if they deposit $5, you get paid zero. And these are just some real examples that we've dealt with over the time.
Essentially, CPA is like, the best way people could probably visualize it is back in the day, a lot of bookies would have like a refer a friend button. And if you clicked a link and referred a mate and your mate signed up, you would get like a $50 bonus bet. Yeah. Well, that's kind of like what we are now, is we are the referrer mate, where we put a link, and if people use it, we'll get a flat rate per sign up, whether it be 50, I've had as good as probably 100 per sign up, which, you know, in reality means that those bookies value each customer. Like, every single customer is different. This is a flat rate that just obviously works out an average, and every bookie, as it goes back to like wanting market share and obviously having a perceived value in customers, they're going to give you a flat rate per sign up. So that's one model. But even these days, I can tell you from my experience, when you share like profitable tips for long enough, bookies cotton on and say, actually, we're not paying you cost per acquisition for customers anymore, because your customers you're sending us are not valuable. We're not actually, you know, getting that money back that we might give you 50 per sign up. So that's been real challenging for me, that we've seen like revenue really drop since 2017, even though we've grown our audience since then. But you talked about there's other models that involve people have got to turn over a limited amount, which is just kind of to protect the bookie. So therefore that someone's not just going to jump in one time, maximize that offer and then bail.
And there's like, there used to be hybrid, like it used to all sort of be negotiable. So like it used to be, and then, I mean, I'm not going to go into exactly what our sort of terms are with different bookies, because I reckon the bookies I'd get in strife, because it's meant to be, you know, you sign a contract saying it's confidential, because otherwise punters.com and like those guys, everyone could just be like, what are you getting? I think it's like, it's kind of like, sort of, you're not meant to really speak about it. But there used to be turnover-based incentives. So, like, it didn't matter if the punters win or lost, you get paid a percentage of turnover.
that seems to have dried up. The most common thing is revenue share. Now, revenue share is one way of looking at it. It's how much you get a cut of the profits that you take that bookie, you give that bookie. Now, this is where it gets like people are very jaded, right? And they're like, well, that, and let's again be transparent, call it what it is. It's people losing money. That's the only way that bookies make money, is someone losing money, right? It's like you said, zero sum game. Well, it's actually a negative sum game because the bookie has to pay stacks in fees now. I haven't like been on top of that for a while on all the sort of the different percentages what's paid. But effectively, if a customer deposits $100 and they have a $10 bet, let's say their first bet wins and they win $70. So they go from, they've spent 10 and they win 70. So they've gone up $60. So they've got 160 now. Then they have another couple of bets and they lose. Then they have another bet and they win. So on like, as time goes on, they're turning over money, but let's say after 2 weeks they lose. Their net loss is $100. That's all they deposited, right? But they might have had $1,000 in bets, right? So they've lost 100 with 1,000. That's what people call, for your audience, I don't know if they know. I mean, this is probably pretty basic stuff, but that's the margin. The bookies talk about a punter's margin. So they're losing it at 10%. And then there's other fees and obviously operating costs. So they've got to pay staff. They've got to pay all of these things. So that customer that's lost $100 in real terms, a $100 note, they might have to spend that in actual in the money the bookmaker keeps might be only $60, right? And then you will effectively keep a percentage of that. Of that 60, not of the 100 of that 60. Now, that's still not bad. Like, that can be not bad money. In reality, like, the figures, it feels like our turnover has gone up. And our revenue, like, the money that we make has not really gone up. So whether the fees are increasing or the punters are getting smarter, which is probably both, and which is, I've got no problems with punters winning. That's fine. That doesn't bother me at all. And all these extra fees that are coming in, also things like the email. I mean, we spend probably $1,000 a month on our email software and stuff, and we don't even use it all the time. I mean, without going into the nitty gritty, and I'm not going to say to people like, this is how much we make. Like, most people wouldn't with their jobs or businesses that they run. But I mean, we've all got other jobs. You know, everyone that works at all my admins, and I wish I could pay them more, but I don't really give them much. I give them a bit of incentives with some, you know, some betting kitties. I put some money in an account. We own a racehorse, or a share in a racehorse, and we used to own a greyhound together that I paid for out of sort of like some fees that we did, some advertising fees. So, like, you know, at the end of the day, we don't make as much money as what people think we do. If you think about it, and people are like, oh, you know, ethically and morally, like, we run a forum, a group that's based around wagering, right? The people that we want to wager for, that we want to advertise for, are wagering service providers, WSPs, right? I don't want to, we've had heaps of online casinos come to us and ask us to promote them. I don't want to, because one, none of them are, I think it's illegal to advertise them in Australia, but I'm not sure about the legality. Plus, I just don't trust any of them. Like, I don't know any of them well enough. I don't know anyone there well enough. I don't know any recourse if something goes wrong. Like, if someone's, like, meant to be paid out $500,000 and the casino goes, I don't know what to, like, they're not, you know, where they're regulated and all this stuff. So we don't do that. But, you know, we're open to, you know, bookmakers. We've had a couple of syndications, like horse racing syndications, reach out to us. We've had a couple of greyhound syndicators like reach out to us. We've had a couple of people like that run events, like that want to do like race tours and stuff. I mean, it's been, the last 2 years have been none because of COVID. But yeah, I mean, that's the idea. Like, the idea is that we're, you know, the shows that we're going to produce, that hopefully we produce, are going to be predominantly sponsored by bookies. You know, and I say to people, like, that's the market. You're in a, you're watching a punting show. Expect to be bombarded with bookmaker, not bombarded, but expect to see bookmaker ads if you're watching a betting show. If you're on a site called Punt Hub that's talking about horse racing, and expect to see bookmaker ads. That's where you bet. Or syndication ads. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to advertise dairy farmers' milk, even though I love it. You know, shout out to the farmers, but like, you've got, you know, you've got to be real, and that's the way it works. And that's what, I mean, we didn't really expect to it to get this big. We kind of wanted, it to be this forum and fun. And we also, you know, we wanted to make it sort of funny. It was also very humorous, but look at the name. So it's pretty clear that we didn't want to take things too seriously. And, you know, all this, one thing I don't like is, and I like, Twitter's fucking cancerous. Like, there seems to be more professional punters. I don't know anyone that loses on Twitter. They all just seem to fucking win. And everyone, like, you put a, you'll say, oh, I like this thing. And they'll go, like, mug bet, like, all this plus EV shit and stuff. Like, get off your fucking high horse. Some people just enjoy a bet for a bet. Some people will put their money where their mouth is when they like something. You know, good luck to them. And that's just the way it is. So, I mean, hopefully that's covered sort of everything with enough sort of depth that people understand, you know, like, if, put it this way, if someone signs up to a booking through my link and deposits $250 and bets that once and loses it, we will end up making very little money off that. I've got some mates of mine, because I've obviously worked in the industry a lot, and they just said, their words were, and that's very true, he said, there's still a lot of people to be fed, but there's not a lot of meat left on the bone. That was the way that he said it, you know?
I did hear that. As much as I said, like, 2017 was a gold rush, I think actually if you were more established in 2014, 2015, 2016, there was like an arms race amongst all the bookies, and they were all trying to get market share, and they were all, there was a lot of money to be made in affiliates. I think when I refer to 2017, I think that was just a perfect storm for Tripod, where we got big enough just on the back end of where there weren't too many restrictions on big advertising, and there was an influx of signups, and we made a bit of money. But I'm
talking about like 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, goodness. Yeah, knows what it was like back then. Yeah. Yeah,
and I remember hearing like stories about the guy that would just go to, like, guys would just go to a pub or a tab, a venue, and I don't know when, I've got my computer here, but I don't know if you remember, Tab Corp, they were just betting tote, right? So if you bet on the tab, if you had like a tab, a phone, I think it was even called phone tab, right? If you had a tab account, like a phone tab account, or if you were betting at the pub, you could only bet on tote. There was no fixed odds, right? So I remember back, and this is back then, there weren't that many corporates. I remember hearing stories of guys that would employ, I mean, this is proper Wild West. They would take out, I don't know, they'd go out to pubs with three or four of them. They'd have a couple of beers before they started. They'd dress pretty like sharply. They'd go into a tab venue or a pub with like a laptop or something, like a bricky old laptop. And they just sit there and they just walk into the tab area of a pub and say, you guys having a bet? And they go, yep. They'd say, well, why bet with them when we can offer you the best of three totes? So you can only get New South Wales totes. I'll give you sign up an account with this mob and you'll get best of three. And they'd go, what do you mean? And they'd say, sign up. I'll give you a free bet. Sign up here. Here's my computer. Put in your details. Sign up. I'll make sure you've got a $100 free bet to get used to it, how to do it. This is probably before iPhones and shit, even, I reckon.
Mm.
So have a bet on this, and then after that, I'll give you the number to ring your account. And they'd set them up on the spot, right? Like, I heard about that, and there'd be, like, four guys in venues doing that, and they'd just go from pub to pub to pub all over Victoria, Adelaide, Queensland, New South, like, everywhere. So that was the proper Wild West, you know what I mean? And that was when I was saying that was like credit facilities. It's probably the same in the UK, and it's crazy to think that that could be happening. I don't know if you know, if you've seen any of like the US is now opening up.
Right, yeah.
Even that reminds me a lot of like Like, I was on Instagram the other day and I was just like swiping aimlessly, and it was, I reckon it was a Sunday. I wasn't hungover for a change, and I was, what's her name? Oh, Paige Van Zandt. She's a good sort. She was like she was an ex-UFC, a bare knuckle fighter now, and she's a good sort, and she takes heaps of like pics in her bikini, and I think she's got an OnlyFans or something, whatever. But it was on her story, and it was like, it was her, and she's like, sign up to mybookie.ag and use code Van Zandt, and you'll get $1,000 bonus bet if you put in $1,000 that you can bet on today's UFC. And I was like, holy fuck, I haven't seen that.
I listen to American sports pods where then they promote a bookie and they say, oh, get boosted odds on this. And like over here, you can't even talk about boosted odds and stuff. So yeah, it is kind of like they're going through that over there and the enticements. And again, massive battleground for market share in the US. You can just imagine, like, just magnify everything that Australia has to offer just with the population alone and the demand over there. But yeah, to kind of wrap a bow around affiliates as well. Obviously, there's multiple models, as we said. So there's a lot of assumption that anybody that's got links is making money off losses, when that definitely is not the case all the time. And certainly, like, when you're someone like the Tripod, where you're trying to promote, profitable tips and profitable ways to bet, there's no benefit in the rev share model because the punters are all in profit. So I'll give another, true example, BetEasy.
Yeah.
We got affiliate links for BetEasy. And now, again, it goes back to our rationale of like any bookie that we would use, why not have a link for it? And then we'll see what happens. But BetEasy didn't give us any option of CPA. We couldn't get a flat rate per sign up, which is what we wanted to get with each bookie and what we had with most of the other bookies. So there was simply, they said rev share or nothing. So we were on revenue share, which was meant to be 25% of people's losses, right? Yeah. We were with them for years. We never made a cent. We could see the numbers, and anyone who joined them with the Tripod link, and then it would add all the accounts together, was just further and further in profit for months, years, until they joined up with Sportsbet. But we still promoted them every week because they had some good odds and some good lines and some good promos, and we were using them. So like, people might not think that. They'd think you'd only promote what benefits you. But, like, we were still sharing them for best bets and stuff. We never made a cent. But we still saw it. They were still giving us sign-up offers. So it was still of benefit to our followers.
Yeah, to your followers.
And if you're accepting money from a bookie, the fact is no different to any sports star that you see that's on a betting ad or, in a betting campaign. All money that bookies make is from losses of their customers. Hunters. Bookies don't make money any other way. So any money that bookies give to anybody for advertising, what they give to Facebook or what they give to Fox Sports or what they give to Ricky Ponting or whatever, is obviously, a share of punting losses. So the morality side to it, I do understand that. And I think it's important that people do understand that there's people out there that might be promoting a bookie that may be benefiting in some way from people who use it if they lose. So that is, you've got to have confidence and trust in the source that if you're going to follow their tips or you're going to follow their content or you're going to use their link, like, do you have that trust that they're doing the right thing by you? And it goes back to what you said before, what we've discussed as well, is like short-term versus long-term gain. If someone's got longevity, like Punt Hub's been around for years, so has Tripod, we're not doing things to benefit ourselves in the short term. We're not selling people, promising people the world to sign up to everything tomorrow, and then because we're going to give you all these tips that are guaranteed to win, and then it doesn't happen. Unfortunately, there are a lot of services out there that will tell you anything you want to hear to get you in the door, whether it be to subscribe or to use their link. But where, if you're not going to, this is where it comes back to, like, people say you work for the bookies. Well, I get that a lot, or you probably do after a loss. People are saying, oh, it's because, as if to say that I can predict the future and I knew it would lose and I would give it out on purpose or something like that and ignore every other winner. How does that work then? If you give out more winners than losses, there's no money in it for you under the rev share model. So I think it's a bit misguided when people say that. But, people will paint everyone with the same brush and say, like, you work for the bookies if a tip loses. Well, it comes down to what your audience is, like, exactly what you said, like, the audience is punters and they need bookmakers. So I actually think it's doing a service to our followers to promote to them the most reliable bookies.
And like, and I said this to people, look, man, if you think we're trying to tip losers, go get some money, put it into Betfair and lay every bet. Now, you would have made a fortune if you'd done that following me, following us the last couple of weeks. But before that, we tipped a couple of things at $16, $12, you know, $20, $21. We had, like, we were having profitable league or borderline, you know, weeks where we either just win or just lose. But, you know, and we had a lot of, like, things running sort of seconds and thirds that each way punters could have still, and that were paying well over $2 a place. So each way punters could have, like, made money on that. You know, one thing I always say to that, if you think that people are trying out there trying to tip losers, it's because they want to make money off your losses, you can do the opposite of that. You can go on a Betfair and back these things to lose, which is lay bet.
Anyway. Or in sport, you can just bet the other team. It's even easier than that. So, yeah, there's always people that act like, oh, they know for sure, like, oh, you're deliberately losing, and think, like, I wouldn't say a word if I knew that was the case. I'd have a free gold mine that if I really, really thought it was true that somebody was deliberately feeding losses to their followers because somehow they knew what the result was going to be, all you got to do is go and bet the opposite side, then you're guaranteed to win, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
But somehow I've never seen anybody manage to do that successfully for too long.
Yeah.
But that's just something that we cop. But, you know, that's actually why it's better to kind of to share the truth behind it, because some people had no idea about this kind of stuff. Others did, but might have had the wrong idea too. So, you know, and we're obviously open to answer more questions or whatever in the comments.
With the bookies that we do promote, we've helped heaps of people with countless amounts of things. And the, like, the haters and the naysayers and the you know, people with gripes will say, well, the customer can just go and talk to the bookie themselves. Like, I'll ask the audience, how many times have you spoken to someone, whether it's live chat? I don't really use live chat. I prefer a phone call, that just don't know. It's like that won't know the answer to, like, a simple question. Like, hi, this looks like it's been incorrectly resulted. Can you please check? And they'll just, it'll be something generic. They're like, hi, our traders reserve the right to result things based on blah, blah, blah. And you're like, no. We're kind of a bit of a middleman in that sense, where some people out there, and there's not that many, and I said before, so it sounds contradictory that I'm like, have you asked the bookmaker? There are some things that they may have checked with the bookmaker, and the bookmaker's come back and said, or they've got someone on live chat that doesn't know, and it's like, no, that's done correctly. And they'll come to us and go, hey, look, I'm scratching my head here. I reckon this is wrong. Like, they've come back and I'll look at it and I'll go to their rules and I'll go, no, you're right. That's incorrectly resulted. That should be a push, or that should be a void. That should be whatever based on. So we will then contact the bookie through the back end and say, hey, guys, look, I've just spoken to, you know, Mr. Smith. He said this and this happened. He spoke to someone. Can you just have a look at it and check? And I'll get, and our sort of, the people that we talk to are a bit more versed in punting. You know, we talk with guys higher up the CS, the customer services team. So they'll look at it and go, shit, mate, you're right. Thank you. We'll get in touch with that customer. I'll go back to the guy and say, hey, Mr. Smith, they did fuck up. They're going to ring you and apologize and let me know how it goes. So that's not like, it's not like we're the flying doctor and saving lives, but it's helping people that may have not been able to find help, or it's answering some people. A lot of people are really scared to ask questions because they're like, oh, is this a really dumb question? But this happened.
So, and you could have a volume of people reporting similar incidents to you. And then you could kind of aggregate that and then report to the bookie. And it could be something like, oh, look, in your terms and conditions, you've got something that is misleading people or people aren't happy with. And so each individual is being told, oh, no, your bet's resulted correct because of our terms and conditions. But you could bring up a broader issue to the bookie and say, well, there's something that's causing confusion. Yeah, and everyone's saying, and it's putting people off, and you can actually enact change.
Yeah. And we do that a lot. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, man. Like, even this conversation, we've been yarning for a while, but there's so much, like, there's so much to know about punting, like, and it's quite intimidating for new people coming and, like, and, you know, I guess we want to be funny, we want to be laid back, but we also want to provide some sort of value add. Like, we want people to go, yeah, that punt hub's all right, or punt hub's, like, we don't, I don't need people going, like, punt hub's the fucking best, like, yeah, punt hub's good, like, I learn a couple of things. Even if they learn two or three pieces of information, and then they end up leaving and getting off the punt, at least we've served a purpose, right? We just want to stick to punting. We want to do it pretty well. We don't want to be take it too seriously. We don't expect people to devote hours and hours of their day in the group. They can if they want to, or they can just come and go as they please, you know. I think the fact that we've been pretty sort of laid back and reasonable and flexible like that is part of the reason we've sort of grown. And, you know, we always try to say in a lot of our smart things, like, yes, we make a kickback off this. If you don't like it, go and sign up without using us. That's fine. We're not going to lose sleep over it. Like, I'll put up a link for Neds or Ladbrokes or Unibet or Boombet or one of the other ones. Who else is there? BetRight or another guy. And, like, if people are like, oh, you guys just make, like, money out of this. Yeah, we do. If you don't like it, just go to their website without using my link. Right? You know, if they want to use our website and help support the group, that's great. You know, either way, you know, it is
what it is. Yeah, I mean, the conversation like we've had now maybe gives people an idea of like why it might be worthwhile using a link, like because it supports a group and all the things that go on behind the scenes that maybe people don't see, but it's everyone's individual choice. Like I say the same, just do whatever decision you feel is the best choice for you. You know, we're you know, expecting anything out of anybody, and come and go as you please. And if it's worthwhile, it's worthwhile. That's heaps, man. I've got like heaps to work with. So I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Mark. That was his first ever interview of that kind. And I found him great to talk to. I did try and tidy it up with the editing. Again, apologies if you felt it jumped a little bit. It was just for me to condense as much of a chat that was over 3 hours into a little bit more manageable kind of couple of hour episodes of the Why World of Punting. But the great thing about chatting to Mark was the fact that we went off on tangents sometimes gave us heaps of interesting ground to cover. If you enjoyed it, please let us know. And if you've raised any other questions or you want any more kind of information, anything that comes to mind, just jump in the comments of YouTube or on the Facebook posts and feel free to ask us. Next up, we've got Tristan. So Tristan's back. He's going to talk about challenges that his business has faced in the last 10 to 15 years, including like stiff competition from some much larger operations that have come along, and some have come and gone and some have merged, and we get into all that. The topic of how punters often used to be able to get much bigger bets down on much more bookies than they can now, and why that's the case, how all the legislation has affected and restricted his business's ability to grow and to market to new customers, and how they deal with that. We cover other major changes in the industry, such as, you know, extinct or nearly extinct practices, such as punters betting with credit. But our chat begins discussing the rapid evolution in the last decade of technology and punter behavior and how that's affected running a bookmaker.
Yeah, oh, it's been a massively evolving space. Like when I first got my start, I was on course. My dad was one of the biggest bookmakers in Australia for a long time, and he was on course at Gold Coast and in Sydney, and I worked for him. And I was at uni at the time, and we went from just where you could only take bets when you're on the track. So you'd go there, and it seems like such a big shift. We used to go to the track on Saturday morning with our prices of what the footy games were for 5:30, so that people would come up after the races and have a bet. And we didn't have the information on if Joey Johns was going to pull out for the night. So we'd still be betting the same prices that what we had at the start of the day. It seems very naive in retrospect, but obviously you only had a very small pool of punters. You were reliant on people that were at the track or ringing up on our official phones, where we could only take the bets on course. So then I was at uni and I saw everyone betting away on their smartphones or on their laptop in class. And I sort of said, well, this is probably something we need to investigate. And we went online and it just changed things massively. A, it opens the door to a lot of extra customers, a lot of different customers, where you're not just looking at that pool of people that you build up over a long period of time. Obviously, they still come to you online, but it gives them the ability to access it. And most importantly, from our point of view, just having the ability to ring and place a bet outside of when you're actually on that race course, which is so key, because we could never take a bet on a Friday night footy game when we were only fielding on Saturday. So that was huge. And then just for punters to be able to, if they're at the pub, to either get on their smartphone, to ring up from there, do it at any time. It was something from our perspective that really changed the amount of turnover we took. And also from a customer's point of view, it gives them access to a lot more information. They're not also backed into a corner that they could only have a bet over a specific window as well, where they didn't have all the certainty over player moves. For example, we could only take a bet on a Sunday game when we're at the track on Saturday. So punters obviously didn't have all the information at hand. You weren't to know who was going to play the next day too. So it was such a massive change when all of these things evolved.
Do you recall ever someone coming and having a big bet on like a sports result and you kind of thinking, oh, have we got our odds or our line correct for this one?
Oh, I just remember saying to Dad after the first season, how can we keep losing on these games? It seemed so obvious in hindsight, but punters were obviously clued into it. We didn't have the information and we were putting up really stale markets and we weren't on top of it. We were focused on the racing and we had some really big professional punters that we'd release our markets. And this is how the industry shift. We used to work on Wednesday at the track and Saturday at the track. So we were only able to take bets in those two periods. And everyone knows now the markets move so heavily and the limits and the liquidity is not there on a Wednesday when the markets go up. I know they go up on a Monday and Tuesday now, but Wednesday is when the totals go up for us. And we had to bet much bigger than what we were comfortable betting on a Wednesday because we knew we didn't get an opportunity to take any more bets until Saturday rolled around. So if we wanted some action on the Friday night, we needed to take a pretty decent crack on Wednesday, which in hindsight wasn't the most profitable way to do it, but it was the only way we could legally do it. So it was... It was a very, very steep awakening and we realised pretty quickly into our new ventures online what we'd been doing that was probably not the most efficient way to price things in the early days.
And the other thing that I always think about back in the early days and even when I first we would have been having sports bets, like the monopoly that the TAB used to have over sports betting, really it was the only feasible way anyone really wanted to have a punt, you know, on an upcoming sports event, or the by far the vast majority of people would walk into their local tab. But as you say, that evolution of technology, and once we all got like the internet, you know, in the palm of our hand, then that opened up, well, I don't have to just bet with TAB anymore. I can bet with any online, you know, betting provider. So that would have opened up an opportunity for you guys to get a lot more customers and turnover that way. But I guess also would have added a lot more competition into the marketplace.
Oh, for sure. Like a couple of things on that point. The TAB's market were pretty accurate because back then they were taking sizable bets off everyone because, as you say, that was the one-stop shop. So a lot of people could walk in there, they could have their $5,000 and $10,000 bets on a Wednesday and there'd be a good chance of those bets being accepted. So the market was reasonably accurate, but from a punting point of view, you only had that one outlet. So if you... You know, if you didn't like the 3.5, you could wait for maybe it to drift, or you were sort of a bit hamstrung as to what line you can take. Now with the competition and the amount of different options out there, there's a lot of games where you can, you know, if the line's 3.5 at one place, it might be 2 flat at somewhere else. It could be 4 flat somewhere else. There's so many different opportunities for punters now to get increased value just purely on the back of competition and differing of opinions. So the marketplace has really evolved in that sense for a punter's point of view. I know there's been some changes. There's been positive and negative changes from a punter's point of view, but I think that's the overwhelming positive now that there's so many different options. The market percentage is so much more attractive from a punter's point of view just purely because of the amount of different options you have there.
Yeah, I still remember clearly, like TAB, that was my first introduction to sports betting, and I'd always look at their prices and any 50-50 line was $1.85. There's no one to compete against, you know. Like now you'd think that's a bit stingy if a bookie's only offering $1.85 both sides of a 50-50. But if they had no one to compete against, we just took that as the norm. So speaking of, I guess, competition, do you remember this sort of timeline when some big bookies came to compete in Australia?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was an evolving space. So Sportsbet have been known as Sportsbet for a long period of time. They're a massive company now, but they probably have changed in the last 5 or 6 years since Paddy Power's taking over to be a real bulk provider, and they lead in most concepts with a lot of their marketing and all of that. But they used to take some massive bets. They used to, like, Matt Tripp is a really prominent figure in the gambling world, and he was a big punter and a big bookmaker, and he had really strong limits, and they were one of the first bookmakers to really take on and offer a heap of sports and take really sizable bets. Centrebet were probably the first bookmaker to really go in that space. They were a massive company as well, where they eventually merged with Sportingbet, who in turn went to William Hill, and then in turn went to BetEasy, and now BetEasy and Sportsbet have merged. So there's been many, many evolutions. There was Alan Iskander, who was with Betstar. They were another sort of bookmaker that was sizable, and then they got overtaken, I think, by bookmaker.com, and then Ladbrokes swallowed them up. So there's been a lot of evolutions. When we first started, it was more your probably a lot of bookmakers similar to us, where even though they were corporates, they were family type operations, two or three man operations, where it was more bookmakers gravitating from the racetrack to having a presence online, like what we have and we do. And then when the influx of the overseas bookmakers came, when Paddy Power came and took over Sportsbet, it was big news. It was it started the trend in a lot of ways, where we lost a lot of those more individual-based corporates and the overseas raiders have come in, and they've done a good job in some respects. As I said, there's so many more options now for punters. There's a lot more promotions and these sort of things that probably weren't there back in the day as well, but it certainly has shifted. And I'd say it would have been that 7 or 8 year period ago where Paddy Power came in, and then it's a few others started to follow suit.
Does that make life more difficult for you guys because they're more powerful? They've got like bigger marketing power, bigger marketing draw, and as you mentioned, like bigger promotions potentially, and ones that they can advertise to people. So how did you find that when the big boys come in, and they're obviously all fighting for market share, so they're trying to be as attractive as they can be, and they are trying to poach customers too. Did you like guys kind of feel that pressure?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Like it comes in, and there's a lot of pressure associated with that because you've got some really, really big companies that are coming in that just buy and sell us every day of the week in terms of what their budgets are, what their staff forces are, what their number of markets, what their resources are. You can't compete with them head to head. But what we can do is we can find our niche, and what we have done is found our little niche where we can sort of sit into a little space where we can sort of make it our own. And we probably bookmake a little bit differently to the others now, but back in the day, we were bookmaking like everyone else. So the other companies have come in and they have changed the landscape, and it does make it more difficult, but it's also one of those ones where it creates, as I said, creates an opportunity. So it's just trying to not worry too much about what the others are doing, trying to focus on our own backyard and try to do the best job we can do, because at the end of the day, we haven't really changed too much over those years, and we're just trying to get a little bit of market share back ourselves, but you have to do it in a smart way, because if you go toe-to-toe with them, there's only going to be one winner.
Yeah, competition is definitely good for punters because everyone's trying to up their game, but also that like means you're not going to have complacency. Another point you kind of made there about how, Sportsbet used to take some really massive wages. It does seem to me, but this is kind of more anecdotal, that people used to get their bigger bets on a bit easier, and almost so then that would make me feel like nowadays a lot of bookmakers are a lot more conservative or have a lower risk profile. And like, do you know why that might be the case, if that's true?
Yeah. And I think it is. And this isn't in no way disrespect to Sportsbet, saying they used to take bigger bets. Like they are still the premier bookmaker in the country, in my opinion. And they are very, very fair at what they do at the moment. But probably 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, it would be absolutely regular occurrence where people could have 5, 10, 15,000 at multiple different bookmakers, and they could get 100,000 on a game very, very easily across 5 or 6 different agencies if they wanted to. It's almost impossible now for sharp punters to be able to do that. And there's a couple of different reasons for that, is that the product fees have come in. So back in the day, there used to be minimal turnover expense. So if you had someone that was breaking square, they were breaking square. If someone breaks square these days, they're costing the bookmaker a lot of money. So a number of the bigger operators are probably not wanting to facilitate that business because of the fact that at the end of the day, they have to communicate to their shareholders. It's not a case of now me sitting there like an old bookmaker on a stand where you're willing to take this person on mono and see who's the better punter or the bookmaker at the end of the day. When you're a really big company like some of these others are, you have to think of your shareholders' interest at the be all and end all, because at the end of the day, as much as it's all great to be a bookmaker, a really big bookmaker, and be betting big limits, if you don't get the results, then you've got to convey this information back to a number of other people that don't understand it as well. So it's a case of, I think now a lot of the bigger operators, they completely run by, you know, margins, and they have to be making X amount on turnover. And if they aren't, even if they've increased turnover and they're making 5% instead of 8%, the requirements that they have to do, I don't know the inner workings of it, but to me, that's probably the biggest change, in that there's a lot of other people that have come in that help make those decisions now. The product fees also are huge. Like, they're a massive change in dynamic, because as I said, you can't afford to take on a break-even customer to high levels anymore. It puts you out backwards, and it's very difficult to do. We obviously try, and we have very, very fair limits to everyone, but it means our margins are way for thin. And you know, a lot of the bigger agencies that have to report back to their shareholders aren't prepared to do that.
That is really fascinating. I've heard people say, like, oh, I got banned from this bookie and I didn't even make a killing. And you say, you think, well, that can't be right. Like, why would they knock you away unless you, like, you know, hit them for a good whack? But kind of what you're saying there, that if they're turning over money each week, and one week they're up a little, next week they're down, but overall they're plugging away, they don't think they're doing anything wrong. Well, they're not doing anything wrong, but because of all the fees associated with their turnover, they are pure liability at that point for the bookie. So that's interesting that it's like, if, you know, if tax and fee structures come in that are causing the bookies to want nothing but clients that are very profitable for them, then that's definitely not a great thing for people that are you know, trying to bet with any type of edge, and it does make things a lot tougher. And I just think if there's a bit more knowledge and transparency out there, then I think more bookies may follow suit, like along the lines of what you guys do, where if the reputation gets out there that certain bookies aren't, you know, are willing to take that on despite the challenges, you're still willing to take a fair bet and not ban people purely for winning. And then that's going to, hopefully you'll get the reward because you'll get more customers, then other bookies follow suit, and, you know, then everybody's better off, at least in my view. Maybe that's optimistic, but talking about how, you know, things have changed, how's your marketing changed as well? Like, we spoke about a few years ago when the bookies were, a few of the big corporate bookies were really trying to make a push to get a bigger market share. It was almost open slather in terms of like promotions and what they could offer people to make it attractive to join up. Now it's way, way stricter in terms of like no form of enticement. And there's been a transition for this from what I remember. It started like certain states, like South Australia, I remember being stricter than other states. But at this point in time, it's virtually across the board, and it's very hard to really just market to one state. But can you remember kind of like the evolution of marketing your brand, your business, over the last few years, what you've been able to do and what you can't now?
Yeah, it's been a massive change. And to be fair, we never really marketed in the peak of when you could really open slather, you could say whatever you wanted. We tried it once in the year Fiorondo won the Melbourne Cup, and we got a stack of customers, and you could openly advertise opening deposit matches. You could offer whatever you wanted, and that was all about getting extra customers. And now that's completely changed, which I think is a good thing. I think there's some benefits there where you don't want to induce someone to open an account and think that it's a guaranteed win. Like that's the purpose behind these sort of things. There used to be a lot of turnover requirements on bonus bets and these sort of things. So there's been a big change and a big shift in that mentality, where if you are to give a bonus bet out now, there's no turnover requirements that punters can have. So there's been a big change in a whole variety of it. There's still a lot of grey area. It's still very, very difficult to know exactly what you can and can't say. And we've never, ever gone out there with the intent to ever try to breach or break any laws. But there's so many different rules. Like you touched on, that it was more strict in one state than others, and there's still a big differences across the board, and obviously being a smallish sort of company compared to some of the bigger boys, we haven't got the big legal teams or the big regular, you know, to be able to. So we very much err on the really cautious side of these sort of things. So there's been a big shift, as you say. It's changing more, even when you could and couldn't advertise, you know, like that. I think there's been a change in when ads go up on live TV, all these sort of things. And I think in some sense, there's been a really positive shift in that sense. There's been a lot of focus on responsible gambling, which is so important. It's so important that people do bet responsibly. They can bet within their means. There's been a lot of changes in that space where now, you know, when someone opens an account, they physically have to opt in with you know, a limit, or they have to actively opt out. So they have to make a decision, as opposed to customers having the ability themselves to put it on. So there's that original trigger question. There's all these other things along the way where emails get sent out, where every 6 months when people log in, they have to reset their limit, all these sort of things, which I think are really positive changes. So it's been an ever evolving landscape, and I don't think we're at the right stage. I don't think we're at the finishing position yet. I think there's some things that maybe have gone a little bit too far, some things that haven't gone far enough, but we're sort of moving and we're learning, we're growing. And I think that's the most important thing.
So in the last year, would it be fair to say, because you mentioned that you guys are, you know, actively trying to grow now and kind of like showcase what you're about and what you can do to a larger customer base. So this has been the biggest year you've ever had of like marketing, but restrictions have never been greater than they are now. So how big of a challenge have you found that?
Yeah, well, we are fortunate in some respects that we do have that point of difference, and that we do have very aggressive prices. We do take bigger bets, but that only resonates with a certain part of the audience as well. So it does make it difficult. You don't have the ability to basically put an ad out there for someone to give you a try and to see that we have a better product than where they may have been betting previously. So it certainly is a challenge. You have to go to a lot of different facets. You have to go TV, you have to go radio, you have to go Facebook, as you say, or social media, Google AdWords. There's so many different ways to do it. You need to get people involved that know exactly what they're doing. But it is a really tricky scenario, because back in the day, you used to be able to, you know, offer someone an open a bonus bet to try your product out, and you can't anymore. And so you're relying on someone moving from a bookmaker. And for us, like our entire goal with it, if anything, is not to try to bring someone on that doesn't enjoy a punt just on the back of giving them a bonus bet. That's certainly not in our DNA. What we're trying to do is people that enjoy a punt, we want them to try our product as opposed to wherever they're betting now. And we're confident when they come over to our product, they'll see what they like. They'll realize the odds are in a lot of cases better. They'll realize the offering's great, but it's very difficult to bring or drag someone away from where they're currently enjoying themselves to try a different option. So that's the difficulty we're finding, obviously being a little bit late to the party, in the sense that a lot of others, you know, and once you have a customer, you can say a lot of things. There aren't as many restrictions at that point. So it is a difficult balancing act where we're up against, but we're doing our best. And I think we've got that benefit of being able to really sell an Australian-owned product, some of the benefits. That's the thing. You need to find a point of difference. You need to legally find a point of difference that you can advertise, and that's a tricky element to it.
Yeah, and it would be tricky for you, because it's like people don't like change. Like, for example, I got, you know, the first smartphone I ever got was an iPhone, and I think they've just got me now. I know lots of people might tell me Android is better, or I know that some people are in one camp or another, but to me it's like almost – even if someone could categorically prove to me an Android phone was better, I don't know if I'd change, because I'm just too used to it. And I don't even like when my phone tells me there's a new software update, because it just means something's going to be slightly different. So, but maybe that's just me becoming an old guy, not wanting things to change. But I think that's human nature as well, kind of status quo. So for a lot of people, their bookie that they use, that if they're comfortable with it, then they just don't really necessarily want to look for anything different, just because what they're familiar with. So that is hard to kind of, as you say, break that mold. I've had this big conversation with Mark Porter on the last couple of pods as well. You know, and he's worked in the industry too, and we talked about a number of different, you know, activities and procedure that's gone on that would not be, you know, allowed now. Just in other examples, some people may be familiar, other people might be kind of mind blown. But one thing he brought up now, which kind of sounds insane, and I was kind of familiar of this a few years ago, never dabbled myself, but like the concept of credit betting. Do you remember like when that was legal in the industry and have any kind of memories? It sounds very problematic, people being allowed to bet with credit.
Yeah, and it was, and for us, and to be transparent out there is still credit available if you go on course. You can bet with on course bookmakers if they're turnover is under a certain figure. So it was a staple for years and years and years, credit betting on course, where, you know, it was people coming up to a stand and handing over big numbers of dollars. Like, it just wasn't something that was, it was never really thought of as being, I guess, problematic. It was just more efficient. And it was a case of you'd only provide or you'd only give credit if someone had the credentials to be able to warrant it. So we, my dad in particular, who as I said was on course for many, many years, he was a bank manager. He was very you know, restrictive in what credit he gave out. He would make sure that someone ticked all the boxes and he treated as if they were coming in for a bank loan in order to give them a credit facility. So we were very prudent in who we gave our credit facilities to. Some of the other agencies probably weren't. They were trying to attract more business. They were giving customers, you know, a couple of hundred dollars credit to keep them betting with that company. And that was probably the tipping point that caused credit to be completely abolished, because in isolation, if someone had a $200 credit facility, it probably wasn't the end of the world, but then they could go and say, I've got a $200 credit facility at Bookmaker X. Can I have $200 credit facility at your agency? And they might go to 10 or 15 different bookmakers, and all of a sudden they've got 2,000 or 3,000 credit that they couldn't afford. And that was the real problematic issue. And that was something that we were originally a bit concerned when the credit legislation came in, because we had some high profile customers that had quite sizable credit limits that, you know, were able, and it wasn't irresponsible. It was credit facilities that they could afford. And we were wondering how that would change our business, being quite a small bookmaker at that point when the change came in. But since the change has occurred, it's actually been one of the biggest positives in this industry, I feel. I feel now people are used to it. They're obviously having to have the money up front. They know what they can put in. There's a lot of deposit limits that have come in play, which were never as prevalent as what they are now, you know. And all these things are really positive for the industry, because you want someone to be betting sustainably with you for a long period of time. That's important. You want them to enjoy having a bet, and you want them to do it responsibly. It's all very, very important. So it's been a significant shift. And I think it's something that there's still plenty of things that need to be done to continue that. I know they're talking about removing credit cards from being able to deposit, so it'll have to be a debit card or a poly, which again I think is a positive step. So there's so many changes. There's so many changes still to come. I think one of the big things, which is part of the national consumer framework, which is coming into play, is that if you've got a deposit limit with us, in a number of months, it's going to go into a central sort of forum where you're required to have that same deposit limit at all of your accounts, which is going to be interesting how they police that and how efficient it works. But I certainly think that's also a good situation as well, because we might have someone that might have a $200 weekly limit, and they'll email or call in if they're at that limit, and they'll say, oh, can I please elevate this to 500 or 1,000 if they've lost their 200? And obviously that can't be done. You can elevate a limit, but there is a 7-day cooling off period. So I think that's a really positive thing, but the reality is someone then might go and open an account at another bookmaker, and then they won't set any limits, and all of a sudden they might knock off 500 or 1,000, which they can't afford to be doing. So I think that is going to be the biggest change, and it's going to be a really positive thing for responsible gambling. Obviously, we've got to find out a way to be able to protect them from, you know, utilizing cash at some of the terminals, because that doesn't change. There still is an onus on punters, but there is a lot of changing spaces in this game, and I think a lot of them are positive.
Finally, time for the Wide World Bet of the Week. The random AF multi from episode one, it's looking solid. We've got the Man City leg up. Last week's tip unfortunately fell short. We had Dallas to be the highest scoring team in the NFL Thanksgiving games. They were in a wild, high scoring game, 33 all overtime, but we lost the heartbreaker. So despite being $1.30 favorite before the game, biggest favorites of the day, and me liking their chance of being high scoring, well, they weren't the highest scoring team even in their own match. That's a loss. Unfortunately, the next tip is going to be another like long form future tip. I like to share these out. You guys know I've shared a bunch of these on several different events or competitions across a range of different sports. And it gives you something to ride the whole way through the competition if you like the sound of it. So the Big Bash kicks off this weekend. And I'm going to try my hand at coming up with a custom multi that you can ride along if you like. I'm not going to pretend to be a cricket expert. I welcome anyone's thoughts who is one. I've just done a deep dive into all futures markets for the Big Bash. I'm definitely confident from my perspective that I've cooked up something that's pretty good value. So we've got the Melbourne Renegades to miss the top five. There are eight teams. The top five make the finals. The Renegades finished bottom last year. They are once again bottom all across the board in the betting odds. Sorry if you're a Renegades fan. It's hard to kind of see them fitting into the top five. They're in the market. They're about 50-50 to make or miss. I got them to miss. Next part, Sydney Thunder to make the top five. So again, if you've got to kind of consider each aspect, if the Melbourne Renegades have missed, that leaves seven teams vying for five spots. I've got Thunder well and truly in the mix. In the marketplace, they're about $1.60 to make it, so I've got them getting in. And then the final leg, it's a slightly longer shot leg to get our odds up nice and high, and that's the Hobart Hurricanes to make the final. So if you look at just that bet on its own, that's paying about $3.50. And they're about $1.50 to be in the finals, as in top five. Obviously, they've got to make that to have a chance to make the final. The higher up they finish, the more advantageous it gets with seeding. So we kind of got to hope that the Renegades miss out. Thunder and Hobart both get in. And then we get $12 on this multi to get up. For the boys from Tassie to make the final. Don't have to win it, just be in the final too. I didn't deliberately set out to pick for or against any specific teams. I just more looked at the market, see what I can negotiate with Toppy. But I guess it is kind of cool the way it's worked out. I'm presuming a very small portion of our audience is from that far south, so maybe the Hurricanes can be your second team this season. But, you know, across the fact that we've got three different teams, make or miss, and then how everyone's going to be vying for ladder positions, it kind of means every single night, every game, something is going to impact our bet. So it gives you something you can ride. The max stake is $50. If you like it, it's on Top Sport. It's going to be under Cricket Markets. If you don't have Top Sport, as always, you can plug in the code TRIPOD if you want to join them. And you should understand, of course, they sponsor the show and make the show possible. That's the episode. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for the support. Any small support all makes a difference, whether that's pressing like, commenting, or subscribing on whichever channel you follow this on. Good luck if you're jumping on the Wild World Bet of the Week or any punts you have this week. Please gamble responsibly and Lego.